Mark, why don't you, you're doing a survey on Peterson. You're doing a study, but before we get to that, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself?
All right. Let's see. What about me is relevant? Well, I'll get through some generic stuff. I live in Virginia, go to school at Regent University. I grew up on a farm with a Christian family. After getting kind of not in such a good place in high school, I was forcibly transferred to a Christian high school. I sort of refound my faith, or found it for the first time during that time. I started doing mission trips to Vietnam. I would later spend a summer teaching in Vietnam with some friends I made there, as part of what I would be doing in university. So I went to university at Cedarville in international studies. And I learned a lot of cool stuff. I really liked it. Came back, didn't know what I had to do with my life. Failure to launch syndrome. It's still partially in effect right now.
So go to graduate school. That's what you
No,
do if
I
you don't know what to
went
do.
to graduate school. I didn't really decide, to be honest. It was like, oh, let me like call up Regent and like get some information. And they're like, all right, I'm filling out your application now. And it's like, but I love that. It's honestly the best time I've had academically in my life.
Wonderful.
In my personal life, it's been really stagnant, and don't really know what to do with myself. At the time, I was listening to random stuff on YouTube while I did a day job as a delivery driver for a company around here. And somehow or another, I found this weird Canadian guy. And I remember the first thought I had is like, who is this smug guy? Like, I really didn't like him. And then, like, I let the conversation go more than 2 minutes, and it's like, yeah, Mark, you gotta stop judging books by their cover. And I'm like, oh, this guy's so interesting. And then, as is prototypical, I looked up this name, found a YouTube slot while driving, probably not safe, and just hit play. And I probably just hit play during my job every day for a couple months. And so that's how I got involved with him. Yeah.
Down the rabbit hole. Now, what do you think? I mean, kind of, I know this is in a sense part really what your study is about, because I just listened to an interview that you did on the Sorting Myself Out channel. So what do you think grabbed you about him?
That's interesting. I'm never able to answer that, but let me have a shot at it. Let's see. He was incredibly creative with his thought. He was really humble. Like, I wish I were able to be as free with my thought as that. When I do, it's like something like mania. It's not like true honesty. And I saw like a really honest person, and what that is, and like why that's attractive. I wish I had a good model to explain, but it seems like it's done that for a lot of people. What attracted to me was he touches on so many topics, and I found each one to be interesting. Like that's really rare for one person's interests to be voluminous, but all of them interesting to you. That's weird. I don't come across that very much.
So, how did listening to him change your life?
Well, that's still to be determined for sure.
Well, that's true for all of us.
How did it change my life? It was actually scary. It made my life scary, in more weighty, that I had already had suspicions of it, but never really admitted to myself that I can't be so flippant with my own life, with my own actions, with my own words. And his message definitely got it that for me, was it really matters. And so it's been interesting because at this point in the conversation, we've been following that stream all the way up, why it matters. And I think a lot of us are getting what's the word? We feel like we're stuck, you know, just watching Jordan Peterson take it from the bottom all the way to the top. He does a great deal at the bottom. And I had never, never come across someone with such a sophisticated theory, let's say, for all the pieces underneath of our daily action, funneling into what really matters in life and what's really valuable. And that project has been really interesting to me. And I feel like it's on some ceiling and we don't know if it's going to break it. So I'm curious.
It's the pyramid, baby.
No, actually, would you mind if I shared an image from a dream I had once?
No, go ahead.
So the whole dream started, my parents were there and some other couple, and I'll speed it up, but essentially I was like mouthing off to my dad a little bit more than I would in real life. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was funny, but he was taking it really seriously. Mm. So I go into the bathroom and then this cloud comes around me and I can tell it's the spirit of my father, and it breaks my elbows, both of my elbows, and blood is rushing down my forearms. And I'm like just frozen, like, whoa, this got way too real. So I'm just like staring at it. And eventually I just walk out the bathroom and there's a room with this tower of light with all of the colors, like a rainbow. But you can't quite make out the colors, like when they bleed into each other and how so. And then at the top of this tower of light, there's a space and then like a blue ring that's a crown. And it was the most captivating thing I've ever, ever seen. And it reminded me of that pyramid upon waking, but like that like gulf between all of the details of life and the purpose it all serves.
Yeah.
But like you could tell that by the Tower of Light, its purpose was to serve its crowning blue part. And then at the end of the dream, my mom said, called me in for dinner. And I had thought dinner was already over. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. and woken up. Yeah. Really interesting.
That's a cool dream.
Yeah. I've not really shared it, but that came to mind when you shared that.
Well, that's one of these dreams that you have and you kind of ponder it in your heart like Mary ponders the visit of the shepherds, because as you get older, things will happen and you'll think about that dream and you'll think about that dream again. That's really interesting. So what are you getting your degree in?
Communications.
Okay.
Strategic communications is that, but it's really just a mix of social science, essentially. Okay. Yeah, but a lot of people go into marketing or political campaigns. I'm liking to stick in the research realm for now, but it's hard to get people to pay for things which don't have an immediate purpose.
Yeah.
And I can't ride that train forever, I'm sure. So
yeah, that's the graduate school thing too. It's like, okay, now I have this really expensive degree.
Mm-hmm.
Now I got to pay for it. Now, in the other podcast, you mentioned the symbolic convergence theory, and that really caught my interest. Tell me a little bit more about that. I just pulled up the Wikipedia page.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I would like to know what catches your interest in the Wikipedia page. But
well, not so much in the Wikipedia page. But actually, I found that not helpful. I found your description of it in the other podcast interesting, because. So one of the things after Australia, so I go to Australia and I meet with Warren, who I'll most definitely have on my channel at some point, because Warren was the guy who invites me to Australia, and he set up this bunch of blokes thing a while ago, which is men getting together. And, when he sent me an email from Australia, it was completely out of the blue. It was like 8 months ago. And he says, I want you to come to Australia and give a conference on Jordan Peterson. And I thought, are you out of your mind? No one will come. And he says, oh, lots of people will come. And we'll see. So eventually I said yes. And a number of times through, because I'd never met this guy. We had never spoken. We had traded emails back and forth. And And but it was like, well, what really do I have to lose? I'm a big boy. And, you know, whatever happens, whether they manage to pay me or cover my costs or not, why not do this? So just go and do
it's
it.
It's a better story, the one you take right. It.
So we went, and actually we had some family vacation the first week because I didn't want to be terribly jet lagged for the conference. And then the second week I was in Melbourne and, you know, meeting with people and such. But part of the cool thing was that I stayed at Warren's house with Warren and his wife, and my son and I stayed there. And what was really cool is how much in common we had. Mm. And now I'm very high in openness, and I have a lot of experience connecting with hugely diverse ranges of people groups. My father had this gift. I've got this gift. So, you know, I wasn't really concerned about not being able to get along with the guy. That just doesn't happen. But it was amazing how much similarity we had. And this was the interesting thing that I thought, that we both found. So I do my channel, and what I notice from the people who start to congregate around my channel is that they pick up on things, but they can't tell me what they pick up on, and it's even hard for me to know what they pick up on, but it's like birds of the feather are finding each other, and so then when I heard you describe the symbolic convergence theory, I thought, it seems that we have a knowledge underneath what we can articulate that parts of our brain know, and so we're attracted to certain things. And you know, and I've known this in other fields too, because you know, as a pastor you wind up studying lots of different things, and so one of the things of course is marriage and those kinds of issues around it, and there are all these interesting theories about, you know, you choose for your marriage partner a person with which you're going to work out your stuff. And so at the beginning you think, oh wow, I found the perfect person. And then a few years into it, you think you found the exactly wrong person. But the truth is you did find the right person.
Right.
It's just now it's time to start to get to work on your stuff. And if the marriage is going to make it, you're going to have to deal with stuff in your own life you haven't wanted to look at. And so, you know, with all of this, I get this sense that, you know, we are, you know, so we have this imagination that we are our conscious self, and we're in the driver's seat, and we're making rational decisions about life based on what our conscious mind sees, and that's how life goes. And
right.
I think that is completely wrong about human beings.
Sure.
We actually have whole ranges of things going on. We make decisions. We really, just like the rider on the elephant, we make up a story that says,
right,
well, this is why I chose that. No, that's probably not at all why you chose
that. That's what I was thinking. I was like, I feel like the rider and the elephant, like that's the seat I'm in, is both of them sometimes.
Right.
I don't know how the transition happens.
So there's convergences that happen, and it's probably coming around symbolic things that our brains are, because our brains are far more symbolic than our rational minds, and our brains pick up on it. So when you made that little description, I might be totally wrong about this theory, but when
you're right.
That's what I thought about.
Yeah, and part of what I thought is interesting is what could make some people uncomfortable about Peterson and people who talk like this is, as you say, woo. It sounds a little too mystical. Yeah. But what I think the theory is doing, if not haphazardly, as far as I know, it's showing like, no, that's the same kind of like queer symbolism we are circling around in everyday discourse. Yeah. We don't know what's pulling us in, and we might not recognize it, but there it goes. It's pulling us in. Right.
So, so you're studying this, and so this is sort of what you're doing. You're doing a survey on Jordan Peterson, and you're trying to figure out what are the items on the menu that are pulling people to him. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, roughly. I'll give you a brief outline of what I'm up to. So imagine the experiment runs something like this. A bunch of people are talking about this guy, Jordan Peterson. They're saying all sorts of things. And if you were to look in Reddit feeds, YouTube comments, YouTube videos about him, his own work, you would just find all kinds of different statements. in Q methodology, which is the methodology I'm using for this study, that would be called concourse. It's, let's think of it as the big bag of ideas that belong in a domain. And really the only definition of why it belongs in that domain is because it's what people who identify as a common group are bringing to the table. That's all. It doesn't mean that they're not at some other table too. Of course they are. And then you take from that, so I generated a little over 400 statements based on just like going through different areas talking about Jordan Peterson. And then I just started to like weed out ones that were a little too much conceptually overlapping. And then some were that were admittedly a little bit more interest of me. Like I really detailed out ontology, epistemology, and teleology statements, but I don't think they were quite proportionate to the degree in which the Jordan commenters were bringing up. But I find that so fascinating. And then so you pull this, a roughly representative sample. It can't be everything. And so I got from over 400, about 78, which is pretty good. Like that's where a lot of these types of studies go to. And yeah, so we have those. And now we're going to take people from within that study or from within this community and have them situate these items according to their perspective. And it just has to be rough. It doesn't have to be perfect. So you'll notice if you take my study that there's like 13 degrees of variance, but that's just to give as much possible room as you have to differentiate. If you have two statements and you can't tell which should be ahead of the other or something like that, really not a big deal in the end. It will pick it up eventually. And then from that, we'll take not like putting traits on top of each other and like studying like Peterson has done, which is quite interesting, his personality stuff. Instead, we're having the respondents generate a picture of reality, like generate a model according to their own perspective. And then you weigh those models on top of each other and then use a form of analysis called rotation analysis to see where they start to clump up. So a really easy example in a book I was reading was a researcher had a bunch of students from a class reading, what is that book? It's well known. There's like a bunch of boys lost on an island and they like kill a pig. You know the one?
Lord of the Flies?
Lord of the Flies, yeah, yeah. They're all reading that. And then he takes a bunch of their essays about Lord of the Flies, pulls out a bunch of statements from them, and it has those students then do this process, the Q sorting process. And then from that, he extracts four factors of how people tend to interpret the Lord of the Flies.
Interesting.
So that's what I'm doing. And roughly what I'm trying to do is to see what would happen if I used this approach to get at what in one of your videos, you had like the buckos and the fail to launchers and yep. the this types. Yep. I'm trying to use a method to actually like get clumps of people's interest yep. and then analyze them qualitatively from there. That's roughly what I'm up to. Yeah.
Interesting. And so you're going to share when you complete oh, yeah. this, you're going to share this.
Oh, yeah.
Gonna be interesting. I'm going to be very interested in seeing.
Yeah. I think it will be cool. Yeah.
So any based on weeding the 400 down to 78, what did you learn in that process?
It's interesting. It was a lot of the, and this maybe is just me, but the political stuff that kept coming up just felt so foreign, like it didn't belong, but it was in the conversation, but it just felt foreign. Like that's all I can say. And so I did end up including a lot of those, but yeah, that was one of the main things I had to weed out. And then for other reasons, I had to sort of tighten up some of the philosophy stuff that wasn't.
People so are bad at philosophy.
I couldn't get too deep and I also couldn't be too loose with it. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I listened to some of the conversation you did on the Sorting Myself Out channel too. Mm-hmm. And you know, Mercury before he lost power.
Oh man, I really wish he stayed. That was cool.
Yeah, he was just getting yeah. interesting. And yeah. before he lost power and because we've had exactly the same. Now I've tried to help other I've tried to help other meetup groups start, but my Sacramento meetup group has really been kind of a flagship group in that we've got some really strong core people who are super committed to the group, who put real time into the group. And it's very interesting how when a new person comes to the group and they just want to really take it in a political agenda, the whole group just basically, nope, we're not going to go there, because we find
you want
that
the conversation to go. Is that
that's
it?
Right. That's right. Right. Okay. We're not going to go there as a conversation. If you want to, mm-hmm. if you want to use this as your, as a place to score your points for the Dems or the Republicans, you do that right. someplace else. That is not right. what we're interested in. But right. yet, as a group, to begin to say, what exactly are we interested in is not so easy. And so where Mercury was going before he lost power was very much, you know, his comment was that Peterson keeps coming up to the line, the metaphysical line, and that's where he – then he'll say, well, I'm speaking psychologically. And so he's teasing the metaphysic. And as Mercury, I don't know who he is at all. Sure. But, you know, he's like, well, that's just where it's starting to get interesting. And then we're in
well,
a sense –
what do you think Peterson means by that? Exactly.
What he means by that is that he is trying seriously to do what – In theological terms, we call natural theology. So natural theology is the attempt to talk about God based on general revelation, not special revelation. In Christian terms, in Christian theology, you divide those two things. Mm-hmm. And theologically, like in my tradition, the Belgic Confession says there's two books. There's the book of nature. And then there's the Bible. The Bible is
that based on Romans, roughly, an interpretation.
What's that?
Is that based on Romans, how Paul kind of distinguishes the two? Roughly?
Yeah, Romans and many other places. Because Romans 1, Paul says, you know, everyone in the world can see the rough, basically, the outlines of what they need to know about God. That is plain to all, he says in Romans 1. And so what Peterson has done, and the group Warren is trying to get me because they took video at the conference. He's trying to get the video to me so I can post it on my YouTube channel, but Warren's not real sure of his computer skills, but so I'm trying to help him figure out how to get me that video, because it's a lot of gigs,
right?
But you know, one of the points that I made in the conference was that I think part of the reason Peterson has fascinated people is that the Christian fight, Christians have been tending to fight over on the Darwin frontier and to doubt Darwin. But for the most part, Darwin won the battle, and atheists and agnostics and science people and many Christians are just basically ready to concede Darwin and say, yep, you know, origins.
I was wondering if the church at large, at least in the West, is going to give up the evolution fight.
No, it won't. It won't.
Okay, so you think this will be a split that remains. Some Christians will say evolution's, we're okay with it, and some Christians will be against it. Think that'll persist for a while?
So if you read The Metaphysical Club, which is a book that Peterson promotes, the book The Metaphysical Club makes the point that Darwin didn't introduce evolution to the conversation. Christians for a long time assumed some level of process in terms of origins. That really isn't a divide.
Now I get it. It's my wording. Darwin was, in your view at least, and I think that's true, he was looking to move it into anti-religion.
Right. He said, we now can account for origins by random processes and natural, because by that point you already had the natural supernatural distinction pretty firmly in the West in terms of philosophical assumptions. By natural processes, we can account for origins. You no longer need a guiding mind to create. And you've been watching Vervaek. I saw that the eidos, the gestalt, the form for it. So what Peterson does, he says, okay, well, kind of like Einstein does with the quantum, because all of the quantum. Einstein basically makes this movie just, okay, let's assume what we don't know. Let's assume the black box. So Peterson says, okay, let's assume Darwin.
Okay.
And we don't need God, and I say God number one because of this differentiation. Yeah. We don't need God number one for origins, for the stuff of the earth. But Peterson, when he's talking to Sam Harris, he basically says, but you still need God number one for psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, oh, wait a minute. We thought we got rid of him. Yeah. And so we're just going to deal with the relational God and God number two that developed. So Peterson comes in and says that. So mm-hmm. So I think that's part of the reason why, just like on the pyramid, he gets to natural theology attempts to construct arguments for God and the role of God in the world, basically by general revelation. And that's what Peterson's doing. So every time he says, when I'm speaking psychologically, he's saying, I am at least imagining I can support what I'm saying based on general revelation, that you don't need anything from the Bible. You don't need any God number two, any revelation to mm-hmm. substantiate my assertions here.
And that's mostly couched in a pragmatism framework.
Right. Because the problem that you have, the problem that you have without a God is that it's really hard to know what's good. Now, someone will immediately jump us, no, because we can tell what's good. Yeah, we can, but what's ultimately good? Because what mm-hmm. we're left really is good for what? And so mm-hmm. what Darwin nicely does is say, okay, our good for is going to be finished with good for survival. Mm-hmm. And so that's where he gets his Darwinist epistemology and say, this is what, well, that which is true is that which promotes survival. Now there's a lot of problems in there that one could pursue, but that's the move he makes. And it's upon that, that then he structures his whole system and can have a good, because the good is that which promotes survival.
Hmm.
And that's how he constructs his one.
Yeah. I was thinking it seems to me in a way that the commonsensical, we know what is good, is sufficient in good conditions. but when things start getting scary, all of a sudden that question has an actual question mark at the end.
That's right.
And I wonder if that's part of why Peterson has popped up. It's like, oh gosh, I have no clue why we're here anymore. And it's scary. And the existentialists talk about this. It's frightening that I have this thing that for all intents and purposes counts as a spirit and I don't know what to do about it.
Yes.
And Peterson's project so far has only been for all intents and purposes.
That's right.
But it's still pointing at that scary thing in the back of our head that at least not forever, no amount of, intellectual propriety will keep us from recognizing.
Right.
And that's the implication, one more step. And that step is scary.
Well, and Peterson and Sam Harris, so I often play Peterson elucidates God number one. So Peterson says has the axiomatic God. Harris has the anti-masturbation God. What God would, you know, tell you not to masturbate? That right. part of yeah. the end of Vancouver right. one. And then Peterson goes to his prayer analogy where, and he used the same thing at Liberty U, where he sits on the edge of his bed and he looks at what he did wrong and he's really sincere about looking for an answer. And he just kind of throws the question into the dark maw of the universe and an answer comes up. And mm-hmm. and that's what gets us back to where we started the conversation in that, you know, and both he and Sam Harris will say, well, where does that answer come from? Well, we don't know. Well, right. there's exactly, and so spirit is exactly the right word. I've been doing a lot of thinking about that word spirit over the last couple of months because of where I've been in my adult Sunday school class in the book of First John. I mean, spirit essentially is that which moves, that which,
yeah.
it's similar to the form that Verveke talks about. And so, and that's then that for me launches C.S. Lewis, because C.S. Lewis says, You know, we like to sit here and imagine, well, we can figure out psychology and the brain, and, you know, we can account for all of these things. But Lewis says, no, you get to a point and something starts coming back at you,
right,
and that's scary.
That is scary. You know, I did a class last summer on, it was called C.S. Lewis and Friends, and we went to Oxford and met some scholars. It was so fascinating. I met Michael Ward, who did the you know what I'm talking about?
The
theory of the seven heavens,
the planets, right? That book. Yep.
So cool. Oh gosh, it's so cool.
Yeah.
And we had to read Jacob's biography of Lewis, which was one of the best biographies
I've read. That's my favorite biography of Lewis.
Yeah. It was so good. And there was one point where we were discussing this concept within the field of communication called entertainment education. And it's essentially that on the one hand, people, there's been a trend to say, oh, here's how the video games, the TV shows, the movies, they're all like, you know, destroying our youth and all of that. But there's a lot of research to back up that people can be edified and made better and adopt new moral frameworks by transporting into fictional realms. Sure. And being involved in the decision-making process by being a part of that.
Right.
And as Peterson would say, why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? You know, and it's like, that's got to be part of it, I'd assume at least. And so we were talking about this, and after it ended, there were a couple questions, and I raised my hand, and I'm like, I heard this room we're in right now used to be a tool shed. And they were like, yeah, it was reconverted. And we were at the Kilns, C.S. Lewis's house. I probably should have mentioned that. And I'm like, so we are talking about the difference between looking along a beam of light versus looking at a beam in the tool shed. He thought about that. And I was like, Yeah, my professor's like, yeah, that's what we're doing, I guess.
Wow.
So that's yeah, you can't get so much from looking at this beam of light. But once you look along it, let's say, you lose the perspective of looking at it. And that's really frustrating to us scientific-minded people. It's really aggravating because there's something there, but our tools don't work there anymore.
Right.
And I don't know. I just don't know what's on the other side of that or what could make that problem fit back together. Yeah.
Well, and you know, I think I'm really glad you're doing this survey, especially it's really cool now that I understand it better because you know, the huge question, and actually, again, one of the clips that I used at the conference was from the March question and answer with Peterson, where he asks, you know, he says, well, what question would you wish people would ask? And he said, well, the question I wish reporters would ask me is, what the hell is going on?
Right.
That's exactly the best question. And that's the question I'm most interested in.
Right.
Because what Peterson is causing or seems to be causing, or at least what's happening around him is just so interesting that, you know, especially from a pastoral point of view, though, I want to know. And the better we can figure this out, the better. I mean, even that he went to Liberty and I mean,
yeah, I was going to ask you what, like, I know I've been watching your videos on this and I share your WTF about this, but like, what is your, if you could put in a nutshell, like, what's the significance of this? Especially that young man coming up, I almost thought that had to be staged for a second, but then I listened to those sobbings, and I'm like, I don't know any actor that can do that.
No, that was real. Number one, Peterson, I don't think Peterson, he is an innocent when it comes to the religious ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And so Liberty, he probably had some inklings about how they play in the political realm, but they did invite Bernie Sanders. So that's interesting. So, and most of us have low resolution. Now you're closer to them geographically than I am, but most of us have low resolution view of them, which is probably warped and distorted. But I think
a lot of my friends went there and it was pretty good. But some of the reports I go, that would annoy me. But like, you know, whatever. Yeah.
But I think, you know, Peterson has shown a a propensity to go to places with large crowds. He talks often about the number of people who show up for his events. And so for him, an event with 12, 13, 14,000 people, that has an attraction to him. And Liberty has money. And you know, I don't know what his fees are. Or if, because with Peterson, there seems to kind of be two things going on. There's the events that are run by the event organizers that he's contracted with, and that did the book tour and some of those. And then there are other things that he does sort of on his own, just for himself. And as actually I did a conversation with John Anderson, who's former deputy prime minister of Australia. One of the things Anderson keeps saying is Peterson is very generous with his time, and he is. So which event was that for Peterson at Liberty? I would love to have that question answered. But yeah, he likes big crowds, and because his I really believe he senses his mission to help the world by doing what he's doing. That's why he wants to get out in front of as many people as possible, because he feels, and he's right, that he can help many of them by his videos and his book and his personal appearances, because he clearly is helping a good many people in terms of his frame of reference have a better life. And so
I find that really compelling, because the guy to me doesn't seem narcissistic for a moment.
No.
And it seems like he really is driven by this life mission.
Yep.
That's rare to find.
Yeah. I 100% agree. People are, oh, he's a charlatan. And I think, you know, no, it doesn't fit the pattern.
I just don't find people like that. So I'll give him a good old anomaly mark there.
Yeah.
Given that the Liberty thing itself, but also more broadly, if you were asked by a journalist, what's going on here around Peterson, what would be your rough take of that? I know you've been working on that long form.
You know, your point that I think as the guy in the Sorting Yourself Out video said, and as I said, actually in my conversation with Peterson a year ago, I said, you know, you wrote Maps of Meaning in 99.
Right.
It didn't make much of a splash. And you were a very popular teacher at University of Toronto. But suddenly, I mean, you exploded. And Peterson told me, said, well, I think it's been building. No, it sure looks like an explosion. And it happened around C-16. And so I think philosophically and religiously, that is critical, not for the reasons people think in terms of the gender conversation. I think it's critical because of this long story in the West about what I call neo-sacramentalism. So that's the philosophical thing. But I think you're exactly right that we're, you know, they talk about, so you have the polarities of the poles on planet Earth, and at some point they're gonna switch, but it doesn't just go boom and then you hit a point where everything's kind of, that's what we're in as a culture right now.
Right.
Because Donald Trump is a manifestation of that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just a lot of weirdness and people don't know what end is up. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of what's driving people to Peterson.
Yeah. On the subject of Christianity. So Christianity has been expanding a ton as of late, especially in the Southern Hemisphere. It's been hacked away for, I feel like it's been like as much as it's ever been hacked away, about the same amount since I've been alive. I always had sort of religious perspectives, but I always knew it was kind of embarrassing to admit that in public. And that was kind of just always what I felt. But when I went to undergrad and my specialty was missiology under international relations, and it just blew my mind. I was like, wow, Christianity is exploding. Yeah. Christianity in particular is exploding. Try to compare it to any spiritual movement or something. It's not even close. And it's no longer the 1950s, 60s missionaries in their black suit and ties doing it. It's native Christians for the most part who are up to this. Sure. And so it's like the Western Christianity has kind of been pushed out of his job a little bit, and that's cool. How do you fit that, the Jordan Peterson phenomenon, within that movement?
Hang on one second.
Okay.
Okay, that sounds good, Marshall. Thanks. I don't have any staff or anything here at the church, so if someone knocks on the door, I gotta answer.
This could be an emergency.
It wasn't an emergency. I just
right. That's good.
This bulletin secretary is going to put a palm leaf on the bulletin insert. I said, that's cool. It's Palm Sunday.
I'm so broken up about this palm leaf. I don't know.
go back and rephrase the question.
Yeah, so the expansion of Christianity within the non-Western world.
Now
we can compare that to its reemergence as a talking point or an issue to talk about in the Western world, at least surrounding Jordan Peterson.
Yeah.
Is there any meaning to be made of that?
Yeah. Well, you're exactly right. So there's a couple in our church that just went to Uganda. She's a therapist, marriage family therapist, and her husband is a super handy man. They went to Uganda, and you know, she came back. She says everybody in Uganda is a Christian.
I mean,
Christianity is just exploding in Africa and Asia.
It doesn't even feel like that when you walk around in the Bible Belt these days.
No, not even close. No, yeah. That's right. And so people here. You know, it's so funny when people here are like, "Wow, Christianity's dying." It's like, you really know.
It's exploding. But yes, around here it is, and that is interesting. Yeah.
But I do think there is. I don't know because it's way too early to know. I mean, the Peterson really just caught fire in 2016, and so we're only 3 years into this. Yeah. You know, the growth of whatever this is, but I think actually it has the potential to be something that remakes us. What happened in American? So
give it to me.
so obviously America came over to the New World via the Spanish and the English and the Dutch and all these European through colonialization. And so many of the early church, many of the churches that were first here were imported churches. Mm-hmm. And Christianity kind of took root in forms of Christianity and heretics, you know, heretical movements took root in the United States. But those have often grown fairly well. Mormonism, the LDS Church, for example, is a very American religion, and it grows quite well. As does Jehovah's Witnesses, another very American religion that grows out of the Great Awakening, the Burned Over District, all of that. Mm. The African American Church is itself actually much more of an American church because the slaves internalized Christianity and altered it in some important ways. But then you get to the beginning of the 20th century and the Azusa Street Revival, which really creates contemporary Pentecostalism, which has now just covered the world.
Mm-hmm.
So what you see throughout the history of the church is that Christianity has an amazing capacity to colonize cultures. And
that's an interesting way of putting it, but I see what you mean. Yeah.
And so, you know, in a sense, so here's a question. If I think, I'm not saying it's true, but it's possible that in terms of a lot of the issues of what I call neo-sacramentalism, science, religion, what is reality, this great philosophical movement, Darwin was a really important figure, you know, over 100 years ago. Peterson, if this continues to grow, might be a similar figure in terms of resetting the conversation. And there's a real dislocation right now. You know, I was just this morning talking to someone that I'd talked with before on my channel, and he again was talking to me, said, you know, people becoming Christians after listening to Jordan Peterson are having a really tough time fitting into churches today.
Yeah, I didn't even become a Christian after listening to Jordan Peterson, and I can hardly find a church I feel comfortable in.
So, so there's, and the disconnect between Peterson and Church, you know, as much as David Nasser was trying to say, come on, Jordan, be one of us.
That was a good try. It was, it was a pretty good attempt. Yeah.
You can just see how they're not, it's, you know,
right.
And so then the question is, how is the church going to morph with this big flipping that we currently have going on in our culture?
Yeah.
Now the American church itself has been particularly adept and light on its feet, for better and for worse. So
it's not moored very strongly.
Not at all. And so it's interesting that you've got a big kind of interest in the Orthodox Church, which is, they're about as ancient modern as you can get. I mean, because they shall not be moved.
It is so weird that of all things is what's like magnetizing so many new converts. I wouldn't have seen that coming.
No, but it actually makes a great deal of sense when you consider all the huge philosophical, the very long philosophical conversation that's going on in Christianity in the West. It actually makes perfect sense. But if you look at the members of the Orthodox Church that I've been talking to that are active in the Jordan Peterson sphere, you look at Jonathan Peugeot, you look at Father David Lewis, who I had a conversation with in Dallas, and he's kind of become a little hub of his meetup and people coming to his church, people I've talked to in my channel. All of these people have been evangelical. They grew up evangelical and they made their way. So they're different from the Russian immigrants and so on and so forth. So there's going to be stuff there too.
And yeah, it's fertile territory to be like remake some ancient things, but humbly and just as needed.
That's right.
Turn it upside down. Right.
So we don't know what Jordan, you know, Alistair Roberts, the dude's brilliant. And what he said, one thing he said to me, I said, you know, I'm worried about Peterson's going to screw up. Peterson's clearly worried about it too. But and Alistair said, you know, but the stuff that's creating this moment is way bigger than Peterson. And so Peterson is really,
those hands are really around all of it. Like there's a lot of hands on this, right?
Peterson is acting kind of like a catalyst in what's happening, but all of the stuff is there. And so more catalysts will probably come. So
So you're a Calvinist, and I come from a Calvinist tradition too. And the guy Martin Luther in particular has always fascinated me. What I've always stuck with me about him is he was kind of ornery. At least that's how a lot of people described him.
Oh yeah.
And it reminds me sometimes of how people describe Peterson in his not best moments. Is he's a little touchy, but he's still serving a similar thing. Don't get me wrong, like Peterson is way more patient than I could handle in a lot of situations. But, you know, you get pushed, we all can get pushed to a threshold. Do you think Peterson is serving a kind of Luther role in the culture?
Ron Dart, who wrote a book on Erasmus, he and I did a conversation on my channel. He's a scholar at Fraser Valley in British Columbia. And he had written a book on Erasmus, and we were having a conversation about Peterson and Erasmus, and he wanted to liken him to Erasmus, but it was really Erasmus and Luther. I said, Peterson's way more Luther, because this whole Peterson moment got started when, you know, you get the sense that the culture just kept pushing them, boom, 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 and C-16 comes along.
I'm pissed.
That's right. And C-16 comes along, it's like, I ain't taking it anymore.
Right.
And that's exactly what happens with Luther. Luther writes his 95 thesis. He wants to have a nice academic conversation.
He's mad.
Translated into German with the printing press. You've got a technological catalyst, fuel there, oxidizer, let's say, and whoosh. And then the Roman Catholic Church is like, hey, wait, this is, there have been some, you know, you had Huss, you had all these other guys. We got to put a stop to this. So they get Luther at the Diet of Worms, and they're like, come on, Martin, we can't. It's like, no. Yeah. And Peterson's that same way.
Yeah.
Corner, you just keep poking him. At some point, he's going to go off, and he's not going to do it anymore. So, no, I very much agree. He's sort of a Luther character.
I hope all the rest of our institutions can hold on enough that we don't experience anything like the wars that followed the Reformation, that mix of political and religious philosophy.
There's a lot of anxiety in the world right now, but you know what, there almost always is.
Yeah, it could just be popular to emphasize it right now.
Yeah,
and there's probably diminishing returns on how much the emphasizing of it actually causes more of it, so maybe it'll cool down, we'll see.
And social media, the creation of the internet and now social media, is clearly a contributing factor in a lot of stuff. And part of it, you know, and Jonathan Haidt has done a lot of work on this in terms of anxiety, because anxiety for you know, teenagers is just, you know, just gone through the roof, especially girls. He attributes a lot of that to social media. So it's gonna be a wild ride. But you know, look at the history of the 20th century. The 20th century was a wild ride. So the world,
yeah, it's not like it's not insurmountable. That's for sure.
No,
yeah, or it's not that it is insurmountable.
Right.
Yeah. It reminds me, the analogy that pops in my head for some reason is like when you fry something, when you first put it in that hot oil, it's just chaos. It's loud chaos. These two substances meet. But eventually it gets to a manageable boil that's not so scary. So maybe we're just hopefully getting to the manageable boil where we can make sense of things.
I think, I mean, part of over the last 200 years, technology has been, you know, technology has in a sense been the oxidizer in this experiment. Mm-hmm. And technological change is accelerating. And so whether we're going to, I mean, because we thought the internet was a big fit deal, and then suddenly the smartphone puts the internet in all of our pockets.
Right.
Now suddenly this bottleneck of knowledge or information, well, okay, that went away. And so now the bottleneck, actually, this gets weird, but it's part of the reason we're talking to the people we're talking to. Now the bottleneck is really human consciousness.
That blows my mind.
Because
apparently it is also my mind, so we'll see.
That's exactly right. That's the bottleneck, because we can only process. It's like human consciousness is this piece of paper, and we can only process what we can fit on this. In fact, this paper is too big.
For real.
We can only process what we can fit on this paper in this moment in time right now. And so everything has to go through that. And so we keep doing that. And that's why you've got people like Google and Elon Musk talking about essentially taking our smartphones and trying to get it, opening up the bandwidth.
Right.
But then it's like, oh, if you think, I mean, we just started playing with Twitter and Facebook.
We haven't even figured out how to get people unaddicted to phones and technology. And I count myself as one of them. It's like, might as well not be sitting here in silence. That's too scary. Distract myself. And yeah, I don't know if I can predict what will come of that. I think given enough time, we'll figure it out. But I don't know if that's something I'd want to be pouring gas on personally. But we'll see. I'm not in control of it.
But there's no stopping it. It's going to happen. And then we'll see.
Yep.
let's go back to what we started, that you've got a survey.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll put the link to it in this, and I'll post this right after we get off. I'll put the link to it. Now, who should take this survey?
Anyone who's been following Jordan Peterson effectively. Technically, anyone could answer it. But for the sake of my study, I'm studying the nodes of meaning within the Jordan Peterson, people who've clumped around him. So if you think, I watched Jordan Peterson, you're probably pretty close.
Well, that's my channel. That's who watches my channel.
Right, right. And so that's why I thought it'd be a good idea. There's a lot of people doing it, which is that the people doing it was the reason I started the whole thing. And so now I'm trying to reach out to them and get their perspectives. And well, what you'll be encountered with, or what you will encounter, is just a set of statements that people discussing Jordan Peterson are talking about. Some of it might be unique to Jordan Peterson. Some of them might be mere artifacts of what people on the internet are really talking about right now. And some of it is, you know, in the hazy realm, but that's fine. And essentially what you do is you, from your own perspective, you take these statements and you arrange them from the degree to which you agree or disagree with them. It won't be perfectly cut down the middle, because you might tend to agree or disagree with more of the statements comparatively. But that doesn't really matter. And there's instructions on how to fill that out. And yeah, essentially what you're doing is you're representing with this field of statements to your perspective, at least at this moment when you're in front of the computer, how you feel about them. So it's a matter of agreement, but not just the binary yes, no. It's agreement plus importance, or agreement plus salience. And that's what you're representing. You know, like if I asked you, is the sky blue or is God real? You would go, well, I can't answer that question. But I would say, okay, now which do you most agree with? And and knowing you, you might put God is real and the sky is blue a couple stages behind that. But as far as do I agree with them technically, yes or no? Yes, but that's not what exactly what I'm after. Otherwise, I would just have people plug in yes or no about those things.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
And what's your time frame on this study?
I'd like to have everything in by this weekend. Okay. But because I'm trying to defend my thesis at the beginning of May. So I have two more chapters to write. I've written three. So I have to do analysis, write two more chapters. I like living on the edge of danger, I guess, but that's where I am right now. So
yeah. So people shouldn't delay. They should get right on it and fill it out.
It can take a time. It tends to go from 25 minutes to an hour. That tends to be what people do. What I would say to anyone starting it, don't be too, don't overthink it, essentially.
Which is usually with all those kind of surveys, first impression, boom.
Right, and you just sort of like do that. And so as you'll even put some statements down on it, what it does is it forms a what's called a quasi-normal distribution, so that the things which you can most agree and most disagree with are less than the things closer towards the center. And you start at one of those ends, and then you go to the other end and kind of fill it in. And after that, you can kind of just look, and you just move some things around however you want. But it's really, you just have to give a rough gestalt picture of how you react to these images. And then the whole point of the study is at the end, we start analyzing every single sort with each other and find nodes of importance. And in this way, we can get, hopefully, instead of just people reporting, this is what I'm doing here around Peterson, you find it across the population. Here's what people are really talking about. And then we can reason from there. Is that because of Peterson, or is that because of the culture, or is that because of something else? So yeah, that's roughly what I'm up to. Yeah.
Well, it sounds really cool. And I look forward to hearing from you what you find. So we'll probably have to do this all over again once you get, and I'm sure the data, you know, you always have the, you know, here's a summary, but then there's usually more color that can be added to it. And so I really look forward.
Yeah, it'll be so fun once we have that. So then we can choose where to suss things out more. Right.
Well, very cool. Well, I'm going to have my computer render this, and then I'm going to post this, and hopefully we'll get some more data from those who watch this video. And you should send me, after we finish here, send me an email on exactly what you'd like me to put in the notes. I mean, whether you want an email address or a web page, the link to the survey, obviously, so that people can.
Yeah, I have a stock in thing I've been sending around, so I'll just give you that. That should be fine. Yeah.
That sounds perfect. Well, thank you.
It's been an absolute pleasure, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for, I'm sorry, I should have, I really wish I had jumped on this a lot earlier, but.
Honestly, I'm a bottom lobster, okay? I know that I can work with your time, that's for sure. So I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you being willing to be flexible today. So
absolutely.
Good. So we will talk to you later.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
Great. Bye.
Bye-bye.